Hello, and welcome to the Superhero by Design podcast, a show where we interview real-life superheroes. My name is Ace, and I'll be your host. My next guest is a motivational speaker, author, and international podcast guest on the topics of motivation, mindset, and self-development. This man is an inspiration for people worldwide who believe they can do whatever it takes, no matter the circumstances. Let's give a Superhero by Design welcome to Terry Tucker. Terry, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Ace. I'm really looking forward to talking with you today.
I'm looking forward to it as well, man. You are a true inspiration, and I know you do a lot all over the world to help so many people, and I'm excited to jump into it because mindset, self-development, that's a huge part of this show, and I know you have so much to offer. But before we get into any sort of conversation, you're everywhere. LinkedIn, Facebook, X, Twitter, formerly known as Twitter, Instagram, all of that. What's the best way for the audience to get to know more about you and your services and everything?
Yeah, so I have a blog / website called Motivational Check. Every day I put up kind of a thought for the day. And with that thought comes a question about how maybe you could apply it in your life. My social media links are on there. You can leave me a message. That's all at motivationalcheck.com.
Perfect. Now that sounds good. And yeah, for all the social media stuff, look up Terry Tucker. I'm assuming that's they'll be able to find you one way or another. And as you said yourself before the show, just look for the guy with the beautiful radio face.
Yeah, exactly. My brother reminds me of that every time I talk with him. So,
well, you said you listened to the Pete Alexander podcast that I put up a couple weeks ago, and we did some improv comedy on that one. And I, as much as I love that, we will not do improv comedy here, but
thank you.
I like to keep things light too. So you might get a joke or two, but no, I absolutely love it. So you've done so many things, from being a marketing executive, hospital administrator, SWAT team hostage negotiator, basketball coach for a high school, business owner. You've survived cancer. I don't even know where to start with you. So how about this? For everything you've done, what was the thing that kind of got you on this journey in the first place?
Yeah, it was really my career in law enforcement. You know, I wanted to follow in my grandfather's footsteps. My grandfather was a Chicago police officer from 1924 to 1954. And he was actually shot in the line of duty with his own gun. It was not a serious injury. He was shot in the ankle. But my dad, who was an infant at the time, always remembered the stories that my grandmother told of that knock on the door of, "Mrs. Tucker, grab your son, come with us, your husband's been shot." So when I expressed an interest in following in my grandfather's footsteps, my father was, "Absolutely not. You're going to college. You're going to major in business. You're going to get out, get a great job, get married, have 2.4 kids and live happily ever after." But that's the life my father wanted me to live.
Yeah.
It's not the life I felt I was supposed to live. And so when I graduated from college, I had a choice. My father was dying of cancer. I could have said, "Hey, Dad, sorry, I know you're dying of cancer, but I'm going to go blaze my own trail." Or out of love and respect for you, I will do what you want me to do. So understanding the backstory, my resume looks a little bit more like a Super Bowl didn't go off in a room, you know, like it's just all over the place. And so my first two jobs were in business. And I sort of joke, I did what every good son did. I waited till my father passed away and I followed my own dreams. And I was a 37-year-old rookie police officer, which by most accounts is pretty old to be getting into that line of work. But of all the things I've done in my life, not all the things, but one of the things I'm most proud of is the fact that I never let my dream die. I never let my purpose die. I was a hospital administrator at the time. I could have said, you know what? Making good money. This is a comfortable job. But, you know, with the support of my family, it was, I need to do this because it's in my heart. It's in my soul. And it was really what started me down the path that I'm doing now.
Yeah. I love the context of that too. Like you had said, I can relate to your story in a couple different ways. The details are a little bit different, but I tell a lot of people, I was that good son, the one that listened to his parents. And the way I would rationalize it in my head was, well, they have a lot more life experience. They love me unconditionally. I'm just going to trust what they say. You know, that safe, secure W-2, I turned that into a business myself. But at the same time, like you and I were talking about a minute ago, I love podcasting. I love talking to people like you. I love relating to my audience. A realtor called me the other day for an engineering job. And so we're chatting and I haven't talked to her in a while. She's like, are you still doing engineering? I was like, yeah, of course I'm still doing engineering. And she's like, okay, because I didn't know, because I see your podcast and this and that, and it's so exciting. And I was like, yeah, you know, I love doing it. It's something that I'm going to always, in my foreseeable future, do. It's something I'm passionate about, but I still have my business and I love my business too. I love my employees. I love the services I offer my clients. And the reason I'm bringing up this story real quick is she had also said, hey, she got a little bit emotional, and this usually doesn't happen with a realtor client. She got a little bit emotional and she was like, hey, I just want to let you know that I'm really happy that you're doing this podcast thing, because I've been following you and there have been times in my life recently that I've had some pretty low times, and just seeing your podcast, seeing you post on social media, being so uplifting and loving, like, she's like, that has helped me out a lot. And in this business of podcasting and social media, sometimes you don't get that feedback. And every so often I do get that feedback that I somehow, some way, this structural engineer guy made a difference in somebody's life because I'm doing something that I'm passionate about. And so just, I don't know you from Adam, but just the little bit I've heard about your story, I see so much of myself in it as well. And that doesn't mean quit your job, you know, go live out in the wilderness or do whatever it is that you want to do that you have a dream for, but don't let that dream die either. And for me, I'm balancing the two. I know there's some people that go out on it 100%, and we'll get more into your story. It sounds like that's kind of the route you took, but at the same time, like, I don't know. I always say God has given us gifts and we got to work on those gifts and give them however that looks, whether it is in a job or a small business or, yeah, really going out and just giving it your all and taking that leap of faith. So I just wanted to share that with you because your story resonates with me a lot. And I know it's going to resonate with a lot of people listening right now. So obviously, they made that TV show, The Rookie, after you. I think it was on CBS or something, the 37-year-old rookie police officer. I let that cat out of the bag. No, I'm kidding. But okay, so you decided to go for your dream. Take us along the beginnings. I'm sure it wasn't easy to transition.
No, it wasn't. My wife and I had recently been married. We had moved from Ohio, where we met and got married, to Santa Barbara, California. And I got a circular came in the mail for Santa Barbara City College. And Ace, I never looked at these things. You know, they always went in the recycling. Yeah. But at lunch one day, I was just kind of paging through it. And there was a course offering at Santa Barbara City College that if you took the course and passed it, you could apply to be a reserve police officer with any agency within the state. And so I thought, wow, this is kind of interesting. So, you know, it's just me and my wife, you know, dinner that night, I was like, hey, honey, what do you think about this? You know, I'd like to take this course. I'd like to apply to Santa Barbara PD. What do you think? And you don't do these things. You don't make these major pivots in your life without the assistance of the people that are closest to you. And my wife could have shut it down right there and said, absolutely not. You know, I met you when you were a suit and tie, 8 to 5, Monday through Friday kind of guy. What do you mean you want to be a police officer? So she encouraged me. I took the course. I actually got on with Santa Barbara PD. So I was a customer service manager for an academic publishing company at the time. And so I would work my regular job all week. And then Friday night, I would come home. I would put on my uniform. I would go to roll call and I would work all night. I'd work till 7 o'clock Saturday morning. And my wife, she tells this story better than I do. She said, you would come home Saturday morning exhausted, but with this big smile on your face.
Yeah.
And just that I knew that's what you were supposed to do. And then when our daughter was born shortly after that, we moved back to Ohio, to Cincinnati. I went to her and I said, look, the bug has bit me, I want to do this full time. Will you support me in it? And so I went to the police academy, you know, started out as a rookie, got promoted, spent about 3.5 years. And you're going to laugh at this, as an undercover drug investigator. I'm 6'8" tall. So,
oh my goodness. You know, right.
Did that and got on the SWAT team. And it was a tremendous journey, but could not have done it without the support of my family.
That is so important too. Like, whatever you do, you had mentioned something very important, the people that are closest to you. You might not have a spouse. For me, I'm divorced. However, when there are big decisions to be made, I consult the people closest to me that I trust. My mentor is a huge one. My best friend is a huge one. I get, you know, it's great to get people's opinions, don't get me wrong, but you need their support as well, especially with having a spouse and a family and all of that. It's not, hey, I'm going to follow my dream and take it or leave it type of thing. Like, we need our community. And it's so important to put everybody in the fold too, because what your decisions are going to affect the people closest to you. So you have to be mindful and you have to get buy-in, because they are going to be there to help support you. Just like I'm sure you've supported your wife's dreams, and it's not a solo act. That's for sure.
No, it's not. And that's, you know, you need these, you know, you need support. I mean, I don't care how, you know, strong you are, how tough you are or anything like that. You know, you need support from time to time. And my wife, you know, again, yeah, I wanted to go on the SWAT team. You know, we had that discussion. Will you support me? We were not a full-time SWAT team. I'm really going to date myself now, but we carried pagers at the time, you know, and
sweet.
When the pager would go up, and I swear, and she would probably tell you this is true, almost every Sunday night, you know, she would make a nice dinner, the family would sit down to dinner, and the pager would go off, you know, and she would look at me like, are you serious? You know, and I would be like, I gotta go, you know, that kind of thing. And it was, I felt horrible doing it, because she'd spent, you know, a good part of the day preparing this beautiful meal for my daughter and myself, and I had to get up and leave. But she, I mean, you know, it was, oh, I don't know, but I know you have to do this. I know we agreed to this, and I will support you. You know, and I was a police officer for 10 years, and then she lost her job in Cincinnati, and we had to move. And so I had to say goodbye to that part of my career. I mean, it was, she's the primary breadwinner. I mean, you don't make a lot of money being a con. And it was like, okay, you supported me in this. I will get out of this, and now I will support you in the next phase of your life.
Yeah, that's important too, that life is about seasons. It's not, hey, this is going to be how it is for the rest of your life. The one constant of life is change. And yeah, having, you know, my mentor tells me the definition of passion. A lot of people throw out different definitions. My definition of passion, or being passionate about something, is being willing to suffer and sacrifice for something. And the example he always tells me is the movie, The Passion of the Christ. Well, Christ was willing to suffer and sacrifice himself. So when I think of passion, right, like that pager beeping, you were following your passion, and you had to, there was a little bit of suffering and sacrifice, not being able to be there at the dinner table. However, it was for the greater good. It was a passion of yours, but it was also helping your community and really being a leader within your community. And, but then at the same time, that chapter ended, like you said, and then boom, you guys move. And now you're supporting your wife with her passion and making a sacrifice for it as well, because it sounds like you're pretty passionate about your family as well.
Yeah. I mean, my family grounded me, you know, they were, you know, in law enforcement, you see things, not just law enforcement, first responders in general, you know, you see things that people shouldn't have to see. You see helplessness or hopelessness. And, you know, there's a lot of alcoholism, drug abuse, domestic violence, divorce in that profession, just because of the things that you bring home. And there were a lot of times after shifts or after a SWAT call up or something where, hey, we're going out to the bar, come on with us. And it was like, look, I love you guys. I would lay down my life for you, but no, I'm going home because that's what grounds me. Those are the people that I love, that care about me the most, that get me in my right headspace, so to speak. So no, you guys go out and have a drink. I'm going home to what grounds me and what's important.
Yeah. Now that's crazy. So quick aside, I've done quite a bit of real estate investing in Cincinnati and the Cincinnati area, including wonderful towns like Hamilton and places like that, that I'm sure you're very familiar with. And there is, even to this day, and I don't know the right word, an epidemic of drug use and addiction and abuse in a lot of those areas. And I know Cincinnati has turned around in the last 10 years, but this was, pagers were predated 10 years ago. That's for darn sure. So I can only imagine what you've seen. And I'm a huge fan of Chris Voss, Never Split the Difference, the FBI negotiator. And hearing, and I have to ask this because I'm a huge Voss fan and I love that book. You were a SWAT team hostage negotiator. Like, one, how was that experience? And if you don't mind sharing a story, I would love to hear it.
Sure. It was a great experience. And you know, I joined the SWAT team because usually the members of a SWAT team are usually your best officers with your best equipment and your best training. And I've always wanted to be the best in my life and associated with the best. So I had an opportunity to get on as a negotiator. And, you know, again, I'm older. And I think, you know, while being in the private sector was not my purpose, I learned a lot. I learned a lot about dealing with people and things like that. And so, yeah, I'll give you two quick stories. One is an atypical negotiation that it never went this way, but it's just kind of a funny story. So I was working, I was a sergeant in District 1 downtown, and we got a call up for a barricaded person with a gun. And so I was in uniform in a marked car, so I got to the scene pretty quickly. I talked to the uniformed officers. I'm like, what's the deal? He's drunk. He barricaded himself in the house with his wife as a hostage, and he's got a gun. Like, okay, do you have him on the phone? Yes, we do. All right, let me talk. So we spent about 10 minutes talking, and I just had a feeling. And I said to him, because usually it's hours into a negotiation where you start talking about solutions, putting the gun down, letting the hostage go, coming out. But this was like 10 minutes. I just had a gut feeling, so I went with it. And I said, what would it take for you to come out? And there was this long pause, and he said, give me a beer. And I was like, I said, if I gave you a beer, do I have your word that you would let your wife go and that you would come out? And he said, do I have your word I could drink it? And I said, yeah, you have my word. You could drink it. Will you let your wife go? Absolutely. So I gave $5 to one of the uniform guys. I said, go down to the store, buy a beer. The tactical team put it on the front porch. And I called them back. And I said, your beer's on the front porch, but you don't get it until your wife comes out and you come out with your hands up. And he hit me with it again. Do I have your word that I can drink it? I said, you absolutely have my word. You can drink it. All of a sudden, the front door flies open. Here comes his wife. Here he comes with his hands up. We handcuff him, let him drink his beer, and off to jail he went. You know, and that was such an atypical. Never happened that way. Happened more like this one. And this is kind of a sad story, but also a story that kind of makes you realize we're not in control of this. This was an individual who wanted to commit suicide. And this started probably about 6 o'clock at night. And he slit his wrists, and that didn't work. And for some reason, he thought he could kill himself by turning the gas on in his oven and sticking his head in the oven. Well, that didn't work either. And then he called a relative. And the relative ended up calling the police. And I'm negotiating with him. It's probably 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning now, and he has a gun. And we got to a point where he's like, you know, Terry, I'm really tired. I just want to come out. And I said, do that. I said, come out. I'll come down to the scene. We'll talk man to man. We'll talk face to face. He's like, I really like that. I said, put the gun down, but take the phone with you and do what the officers tell you when you go outside. So you're going to be put on the ground. You're going to be handcuffed. I said, okay. Well, he hung up the phone, which isn't uncommon because we're sort of trained to hang up phones when conversations are over. But about 30 seconds later, one of the tactical officers comes on the radio and says, we heard a gunshot. And I thought, you've got to be kidding. You shot yourself. He did. shot himself in the head, but he shot himself at such an angle and probably more of a hesitation shot that it went in right underneath his skin at his scalp or at his temple, went around his head and came out the other side. Never penetrated his skull, never got to his brain. And I think that was God's way of saying, yeah, you tried three times, not your time. You're not going anywhere tonight. So that was an atypical one as well. Usually the people came out, but I'll end with this. It was always their decision on how this would go. It was, you know, because they would yell and scream and rant and rave, but it was really at the end of the day, were you going to come out? Were you going to end your own life? And about 10% of the time, that's what they decided to do. Or we were going to have to come in and get you. And so it was really how you decided this was going to end. I was going to do everything I could to get you out safely. But at the end of the day, it was going to be your actions that determined how this ended.
I appreciate you telling me those stories. And also that what I'm getting out of this is even in the most dire of circumstances where somebody has gotten to the point where they're literally holding their wife hostage or they're attempting to kill themselves. No matter how far we go, no matter how deep we dig that hole, we always have a decision to make. 100%, because you've worked with people time and time again that are in seemingly the most dire, outreaching circumstances, yet they're the ones that are still in control. And I just find that incredible. For people listening, I know you're a coach and a speaker and you work with a lot of people. Is that something that you tell a lot of people, like essentially like, hey, like no matter where you are, you do have a decision to make and it is up to you to make that decision?
Yeah. To use a metaphor, so many people can't pull the trigger, you know, that they can't, you know I need to do this. I know this would be good for me. I know this is something that would be positive. Ugh, I just can't pull the trigger. I just can't get it done. And there are a lot of reasons for that, you know, fear, insecurity, things like that. But again, it goes back to relationships. It goes back to trust. And one of the things that we did as negotiators was we used to call it tactical empathy. I think for any of us, you can just get rid of the word tactical and just say empathy, which is help me understand where you're coming from. Not necessarily agree with you. I mean, if I'm negotiating with somebody who just murdered three people, I'm not going to tell them that was right. But by helping me understand where you're coming from, understanding builds trust, and trust leads to changing behavior. And, you know, it's one thing for you and I, or for, you know, you and your family, or me and my family, to develop that empathy and that trust. It's another thing to try to develop trust with a human being that you've never met before in your life. And a lot of times we had no idea why we were even there. No idea what was going on. What led you to take a gun and barricade yourself? No idea. So you went down a lot of rabbit holes, and a lot of time we're like, no, you idiot. That's not what I'm talking about. That's not. And there were times where we would spend hours over here talking about something because the person didn't trust us enough to tell us about the real problem, which was over here. And that's why negotiations took hours and hours and hours. And the last thing I'll say about this is the reason negotiating was so exhausting is because you had to get down in the weeds with this person. You know, if they were yelling and screaming about their mother, for example, and you made a comment that said, you seem like you're a little upset about your mother, you totally missed what was going on. You needed to get to the point where it's like, you sound like you're pissed as hell at your mother. Yes, he gets me. Now he gets me again, building empathy or building trust. Trust leads to changing behavior. So it was exhausting because you had to go where these people were.
Yeah. Yeah. My technical brain is going nuts right now. Like using the open-ended questions, right? Building that rapport with somebody, especially on the front end. I just keep reverting back to that Chris Voss book because it, you know, and the crazy thing, the reason why I read up and studied. I did my whole like 10 pages of Cliff Notes and I pass it to all my friends. Like I'm kind of a nerd like that. I geek out on stuff like this, but like negotiating in general has been such an amazing way for me to be able to empathize with people, to understand, like you said, put yourself in someone else's shoes. The first self-help, quote unquote, self-help book I ever read was a Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People. And he says the same thing, just in a little bit different language. It's like, put yourself in somebody else's shoes. Try to understand the world from their point of view. Like you said, you don't have to agree with them, like your spouse. Like, you don't have to agree with everything your spouse says. However, you have to understand where they are coming from if you are going to be able to relate to them, speak their language. And you had also mentioned another thing, mirroring, right? Being able to mirror somebody, there's an energy with that. And that's so important because that builds that trust and that connectedness with that person so that we can just be open, honest, have a real conversation and go from there. It's removing that expectation, setting up appreciation for that person. Regardless, because most people, yeah, they just want to be understood and feel connected. And all we could say that all these actions are, you know, because of this or that, but it's really a result of not feeling loved or connected or understood in the world. And I don't care if you're a hostage negotiator, you're doing a big business deal, or you're just talking to your kid. It's all the same thing. It's just dressed up differently.
It is. And you make such a great point. One of the nurses that takes care of me for the tumors that I still have in my lungs used to be a hospice nurse. And for those of your audience who don't know what hospice is, it's basically the people take care of people at the end of their life, end of life care. And she's working in the infusion center now, giving me my clinical trial drug. And she recommended a book to me called Imagine Heaven. Yeah. And it's a book about people who have near-death experiences. Mm, and there's okay. So much good information in it. I mean, some of the things that I didn't realize, that if you're born totally deaf or totally blind and you have a near-death experience, you can hear and you can see during that experience. Imagine how frustrating that must be then to go back into your body and you're back where I can't hear and I can't see. I had a little taste of it. But the one thing that I took away, a lot of things, but one of the major things I took away from it was, no matter who the person saw when they died, whether it was, you know, Jesus or Allah or a saint or an angel or a friend or a relative, the one question that almost everybody seemed to get asked is, how do you treat my people? You know, if you go back to, the line with Jesus, what's the most important commandment? Yeah. You know, I love your God above all other gods. And what's the second? Love your neighbor as yourself. And that second part of that, the greatest commandment, how do we treat each other? And that's what you're talking about, the connection that we have with each other. Most of us aren't going to be remembered 100 years from now, but what I want to be remembered for are the connections that I have with other people, because that's really what life is all about. It's not about stuff. It's about the connections. It's about how we treat each other.
Yeah, that's amazing. I have another podcast coming out soon called The Conscious Believer. It's more of a spiritual podcast. And so I've been doing a lot of research specifically on NDE, near-death experiences. And I'm with you from what I've been researching too. People that temporarily pass on, they're always asked the question of, how did you treat people? Like, I don't care if you had an addiction to alcohol or this or that, like that's minor in the grand scheme of like, did you love other people? Did you give to other people? I feel like so many people that have had trauma just don't feel that love, don't feel that connection. And they're really seeking that. They're really seeking a connection. A lot of people don't have a faith walk. And I'm not talking you need to be a Christian like me or anything like that. But if you don't have a faith walk, you don't feel that connectedness. You feel that there's a void in your life. And you can put it on material things. You can put it on a spouse. You can put it on your children. You can put it on a parent. It doesn't matter. Friends, it doesn't matter. you're going to put it on something. But at least in my experience, until I gave my life to Christ, I was just wandering, saying, it's on me. It's on me. I can do this. I don't need you, God. I don't need you. And it always ended in a dead end until I really was willing to say, hey, I want to give it to you. I want to give you everything. And guess what? He was right there waiting for me. That's the craziest thing. And I know we haven't gone into your journey through your cancer and everything, but people don't have to experience near death or experience things like yourself dealing with cancer. My mother passed away from cancer, by the way, and I was her hospice, quote, for lack of a better term, her hospice nurse at the end. It was horrible experience. I don't wish that upon anyone, but at the same time, you don't need to go through those things to really find that love, find that connection with our Creator. And I know this isn't a spiritual podcast or anything like that, but I feel like I would be doing a disservice to people if I didn't mention my experience with that. How's your faith walk been throughout your life, and has it developed? I'd love to hear a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I'm a cradle Catholic. I've been a Catholic my entire life. It works for me. You know, I know, unfortunately, a lot of priests, you know, we get a bad rap and things like that because of the things that they had done. I can't do anything about what they did. I can just worry about what I've done. I mean, I talk about what's gotten me through this 12-year cancer journey, which I call my three F's, which are faith, family, and friends. And, you know, I've seen so many people in my life that have started down the road toward a goal or something they wanted to do, and they butt up against an impediment. Something gets in their way, and they can't get over it, around it, or through it. And so they quit. They give up. But we just don't quit. Now we got to blame somebody, you know, kind of like what you were saying a minute ago. You know, we got to blame our parents or our station in life or, you know, our boss or whoever it is. And so when I got cancer, you know, one of the first questions people ask, well, who do you blame? Like, what do you mean, who do I blame? Well, you must blame somebody because you got cancer. And I've had all 88 genes that doctors either know of or suspect cause every form of cancer that we know of tested. And I have no mutations in any of those genes, which does beg the question, then why did I get this incredibly rare form of cancer? Nobody's been able to answer that. I don't spend a lot of time worrying about it. But when people find out you have a faith life, they're like, well, you got cancer. You must blame God. And I used to joke with them. I'd be like, no, I don't think God got up on a Tuesday morning, checked his to-do list and said, hey, Terry Tucker, cancer today. I don't think that at all. But I'll tell you, Ace, there have been two times, well, been a lot of times, but two specific times. I spent 5 years on a drug called interferon that I took a weekly injection, and I had the flu for 2 to 3 days every week for almost 5 years. And there was a time during that period where I was so sick of being sick. I didn't feel I was living. I just felt I was not dying. And I begged to die. I never thought about suicide, but it was like, look, God, I'm not being productive here. Just take me out of this. And the other, obviously he didn't, but the other scenario was in 2020, after I had my leg amputated and I found out I had these tumors in my lungs, my doctor showed me my CAT scan. And I have no medical background. I don't know how to read a CAT scan, but you can kind of look at it and be like, that sure doesn't look like it belongs there. You know, I had these big tumors in my lungs. I had fluid all around the pleural spaces. And I remember looking at my oncologist and saying, based on that CAT scan, how was I alive? And Ace, I will never forget this. He put his head down. He shook his head no. And then he lifted his head up and he said, I don't know, because you shouldn't have been. Which said to me that God's not done with me yet. You know, when I die, where I die, how I die, way above my pay grade. Don't spend much time worrying about the dying. Spend more time worrying about making sure I live the purpose for which he put me on this earth to do.
Man, I'm about to tear up right now. Your story is just incredible. Like, I'm just going through what if I was dealt a hand like that? And I hate using even those words, right? Because that saying something like that means there's a reason. Yeah, something I had done, right? And I just find it so inspiring that given everything you've been through medically, that you are just such a champion, and that you're through your mindset and your faith walk and your view of the world, that something even physically that's telling you you shouldn't even be here today, you're talking to me plain as day. And I would not have guessed that. I did read up on your leg and everything like that, but I was not aware of the continual spreading of it. And if I had met you in person down the street or here in the studio or something, I would have known no different. That just blows me away of what people are capable of against all odds, that regardless of what we go through in life, God does love us unconditionally, and he's there for us no matter what. And having that mindset, that strength, that knowing, and not to say it's easy at all, because we all go through really difficult things at different parts of our lives.
Yeah, we do. And you know, I was in treatment a couple of weeks ago, and I was talking to one of my nurses, and she said to me, because I told her, I said, I pray for all of you every single day. And she kind of dismissed it like, you know, now you're, yeah, I do. I really pray for you every single day. And she asked me a question. She said, how do you pray? And I said, I'm Catholic. I got great prayers. I got Our Father, St. Mary's, glory be. I got them all. I got great prayers.
I love it. Yeah.
I said, but it's not. I said, I'll give you an example. On Mondays, I react at home, not at the hospital. And I said, the last Monday, I was hurting so bad and I felt so lousy that I you know, thank God, God is forgiving, because I just yelled out, God. And then I said, and that was a prayer. You know, I was, and just like, you know, you don't have, there's no special thing. We tend to think that we are, you know, we're bodies with a spirit, but it's the opposite. We're spirits with a body. Mm-hmm. You know, God is with us. He's in us. He's part of us. He's right here. He's not out there. He's here. And that's what people don't get. And that's what people don't feel. And that's, I was so glad she had, how do you pray? I'm like, what do you want to say? Just say it. He already knows it. Just say it. I hurt. I'm tired. This sucks. Whatever you want to say, he gets it. Just say it. And hopefully he'll be there. He may not answer your prayer right now. But you're supposed to learn something from this. Figure out what you're supposed to learn. Learn it and apply it to the rest of your life.
I love that. James chapter 1 talks about wisdom. God, give me the wisdom to know what to do. But it also says you have to have complete faith in whatever he tells you, whatever he shows you. It might not be the route you thought it would be, but he's going to show it to you, and you just have to have complete faith. And I believe that's how prayer goes. Early in my prayer life, it was, God, can I get this? God, can I get that? But then I would waver. I would second guess. I'd be like, can he really get it to me? Do I really deserve it? It's like, he already knows. What he wants us to do is be obedient, to serve him, give it to him so that he can show us that he already has a plan for us, that he already loves us unconditionally. And it's not going to turn out exactly the way we thought it would. It never does. It's not our plan. It's his plan. Jeremiah 1 talks about before you were even a breath, before you took your first breath, before you were even born, I already had this predetermined for you. And how cool is that? That even before you were born, even before I was born, what we're doing today was already predestined. It was a rocky road for me to get to where I am today. It has been a hell of a rocky road for you to be where you are as of today. But then again, we wouldn't be where we are if it weren't for all these things that have come before us. And having this amazing ability to reach people all over the world through a podcast like this and all the other podcasts you go on, it's we can't live in a better time, in my opinion. And I am so blessed to have this conversation with you. I know we're getting up to it, but I really want to hit on something before we start wrapping this up. And for everything that you have going on in your life medically, what are you doing today? And what are you wanting to do for the rest of your life? I know you had said you want to be remembered about connections, remembered for connections. So what does your life look like today? And as far as you see, as long as God has you here on this, in this body on at this time, what do you see for your life right now and moving forward?
Yeah, I don't know. And, you know, and it's okay. You know, I mean, I was a type A person. You know, I want to know everything. I want to have everything figured out. I don't want there to be any lapses here. And I mean, my life right now is I spend an entire week at the hospital being treated. I go Monday through Friday. And then I have 2 weeks off. And during those 2 weeks off, you know, I write, I'd be a guest on podcasts. I'm writing a second book. You know, I wrote my first book, never intending to write a book. I really was absolutely, I'm not writing a book. I'm not a writer. I that's not what I do. And, you know, there's sort of an old joke that says, when we talk to God, it's called prayer. When God talks to us, it's called schizophrenia. So God has never spoken to me. But I think what God did with my first book was put enough people in my path that started to make the same suggestion over and over and over again. And I think I'm smart enough when that happens that I maybe ought to pay attention to that, that, you know, maybe not God's not, you know, I'm not hearing a voice from a cloud, but I am hearing people that he's putting in my path that are making that suggestion. So that's how the first book came about. Well, now I'm writing a second book because the first book is about success. The second book I want to be about another word that starts with S, and that's significance. You know, success is what we do for ourselves. Significance is what we do for other people. And Ace, the way I've started to see things is that so many people in their lives feel that they're born empty. And that when they get, you know, out of school and in the life, whatever that looks like for them, that then their job is to fill their empty self up. You know, I've got to get great education and have a great job and make a lot of money and drive the nicest car and live in the nicest house, have the latest gadgets. But what I found is it's just the opposite. We're not born empty. We're born full. We're born with everything we need to be successful, however you define that word, already inside of you. You just need to take it, pull it out, and use it for your benefit. So our purpose, our job in life should not be to fill ourselves up. Our job should be to empty ourselves out, certainly for the betterment of ourselves, but also for the betterment of our families, of our friends, of our communities, and of our countries. And when you look at life that way, that's what I'm trying to do. You know, it's like, okay, how can I make a difference? How can I connect? What can I do to make people's lives better? And I'll end with this quick story. About 6-8 months ago, I had a young man reach out to me. He sent me an email, had no idea who this person was. And he said, you know, Terry, I just listened to your podcast and it was amazing. I needed to hear your message right now. And I said, great. I'm really happy that you heard it. What was the name of the podcast? And he told me. And Ace, I didn't remember. I'm like, what was it? I went back and looked it up. Yeah. It was a podcast I did 2.5 years ago. And he found that episode and he needed to hear it at that time. So what I'm doing, what you're doing right now, this is evergreen. This will be around forever, and it'll allow people 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now to go back and hear this, and hopefully it will resonate with them.
That's incredible. Given everything you have going on in your life right now, you have made the decision to keep pushing forward. No matter how you feel, no matter what circumstances surround you, I just love your decision to keep pouring into people, keep being a beacon of light, a leader and a guide for people that are lost in this world. It has been an absolute pleasure talking with you. But before I let you go, I did tell you there can be some superhero questions.
You did, yes.
And I am not leaving you off the hook on this. All right. Whether or not you have a superhero name, if you did have a superhero name and you're getting one today, if you don't, what would your superhero name be?
I'll stick with our format. I'll say my superhero is Child of God.
Child of God. I love that. All right, Terry, Child of God Tucker, what are your superpowers?
You know, you're not going to believe this because as much as I talk, I'm really good at listening. I'm really good at picking up on what is it being said as much as what is being said. And that, I think, goes back to being a negotiator. So I would say listening. And you mentioned earlier about the type of questions we use as negotiators. We would ask open-ended questions. We would ask how and what questions. We would stay away from why questions, because why questions sound accusatory. Well, Ace, why did you do that? Oh, wait a minute. Is he suggesting I shouldn't have, or is he accusing? I can get to the same information by saying, well, Ace, what got us to this point? Same answer, but a much softer question. And I think if you can ask those softer questions, you can get people to open up to you because they don't feel that, you know, you're going to judge them. They don't feel that, you know, they're vulnerable. And I think those are two of my biggest superpowers.
I love that. I love that. Listening and questions. This is a random question. This is not a superhero question. Are you a fan of John Maxwell at all?
Yes, I am a fan. Not as much as I probably should be, but yes.
Okay. Yeah. He's just got, he's got a whole book on questions and everything that early in my self-development days, I fell in love with. And a lot of what you're saying resonates with what he talks about as well. So I thought I just selfishly asked that question. All right.
Well, I'll give you, so there's another book that you might want to read. It's called Ask. Into the hidden wisdom of people around you for unexpected breakthroughs in leadership in life. It's written by a man by the name of Jeff Wetzler, W-E-T-Z-L-E-R. It's probably very similar to that. It's asking the right questions so that people, you know, are more willing. They don't feel, you know, scared and closed off. They're willing to tell you things. And, you know, kind of like Chris Voss or John Maxwell, if you can ask good questions, it's amazing. You can get great information. You can use that information to further your relationships, further your business. And I'm not talking about, you know, how to try to get one over on people, but it's just being a genuine person that's curious about other people's lives.
Oh, yeah. Any superpower, you can use it a good way and be a superhero. You can use it a bad way and be a supervillain. We all have control and that decision, whether we're going to use our powers for good or for evil. So that's why, with whatever we do, we always do it with our faith walk. Does this serve God? Does this bring me closer to him or take me further away? So I really appreciate you saying that. All right, last superhero question. We got your superhero name. We got your superhero powers. Who are your real life superheroes?
I think I would go back to my mom and dad. You know, my mom and dad taught us the value of family, of loving each other, of caring for each other, of supporting each other. I have two brothers. We were all athletes. We all played in college. I had one brother who was drafted by the Cleveland Cavaliers in the NBA.
Sweet.
And my parents literally were, they used to do what I call divide and conquer parenting. You know, where Terry's got a game at 5 o'clock on Thursday. Well, Larry's got a practice at 5 o'clock on Thursday. So dad's going to Terry's game. Mom's going to Larry's practice. And our whole family revolved around that. So our parents taught us the value of family, of caring for each other. And my mom's still alive. My dad passed many years ago, but I think the other group is my wife and daughter. I mean, they're the people that I mentioned that ground me, that I would go home to, that, you know, kind of got me right in the headspace and that. So yeah, once again, we're going back to family. So
I love that. I love that. No, I appreciate you saying that. And, yeah, it's incredible to hear that. It just is so inspiring. If you could leave the audience with one tool, one idea, one thought, I know we covered a lot of ground today, but if you could leave them with just one thing, what would it be?
So I'm going to tell you a story to answer that question. I had one of the nurses that cares for me ask me what it was like to have my foot amputated in 2018, my leg amputated in 2020. And I told her it hasn't been easy. You know, I'm 6'8", so learning to walk again, falling is not an option. You get hurt from this height. So you know, we had that discussion. But what I told her was, is cancer can take all my physical faculties, but cancer can't touch my mind, it can't touch my heart, and it can't touch my soul. And that's who I am. That's who you are, Ace. That's who everybody's listening to us is. And we spend so much time working on this body. You know, we go to the gym, we eat right, we get enough rest, we reduce stress. And I'm certainly not telling you not to do that. You absolutely should. But what I am suggesting is maybe every day, spend a little more time working on who you really are, your heart, your mind, and your soul. We know at some point in time, we're all going to get it. This body's going to die. It's going to decay and it's going to go away. But heart, mind, and soul, I believe those things are eternal. I believe they live on. And I just don't think we spend nearly as much time working on them as we should.
Yeah. Yeah. If we took an audit of what we did every day, you don't have to spend too much time on something like that and compounding that day in and day out, week, month, year. You can make a huge amount of progress with just a little bit of attention. You know, Tony Robbins says where focus goes, energy flows, and wherever energy goes, that's what grows. And I just really appreciate you sharing that and leaving that with our audience. Well,
can I just leave one more thought?
Of course. Yes.
So Ernest Hemingway in A Farewell to Arms, one of his books, wrote had a great quote. He said, life breaks everyone. And afterward, many are stronger at the broken places. Yeah. So understand, just like when you break a bone, when it heals, that area in the bone is usually stronger. The same thing is true in life. Life is going to break you. It's going to beat you to your knees. But if you've got something to rely on, when you heal, and for us, for you and I think it's God, you know, family, things like that. When you heal, you'll be stronger at the broken places. So don't worry that things are tough right now. You will eventually heal and be stronger on the other side.
Yeah. Yeah. I believe Paul talks about it in 1 Corinthians, the thorn in his side. And he asked God to get rid of that thorn. And God's like, nah, that's where your strength's coming from, brother. I ain't getting rid of that thorn. So, and that's literally quoted from the Bible, by the way. That's how the scripture reads it. The scriptures are very clear, as we know. So I appreciate that. That was such an incredible conversation with you, Terry. I just appreciate your time so much. I just love that we were able to connect today. This was not a coincidence. That's for darn sure. Before we do go, I would like to reiterate ways of getting a hold of you, whether it's LinkedIn, Facebook, X, Instagram, Terry Tucker, and then check out his website, motivationalcheck.com. And shoot, I know you wrote that book. Can you let us know the title of it? I'm assuming people can find it on Amazon as well.
Yeah, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple iBooks, wherever you can get a book online. It's called Sustainable Excellence, The 10 Principles to Leading Your Uncommon and Extraordinary Life.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Terry. It was an absolute pleasure meeting you. And I might find myself in Colorado actually this summer. So if I do, I am definitely going to look you up and give you a call if you don't mind.
No, I don't mind at all. I would love that.
Awesome. Awesome. Sounds good. Well, for everybody listening, once again, this is the Superhero by Design podcast. You could be anywhere in the world doing anything, but you've decided to spend and devote your time with me and my wonderful guests, and I do not take that for granted. So remember, with great power, there must also come great responsibility. Ace out.